We now look forward to hearing Brother Roy Highfield speak to us on Thou Art a Virtuous Woman.
My beloved brothers and sisters in the hope of glory, can I just start with a correction? I was talking yesterday about the purification of Esther and the way that the heat and the perspiration and the oil would have been used. In actual fact, it appears that the oil wouldn't have absorbed the defilement that came out of the pores, but the oil was used to prevent the defilement going back in. So the oil prevented the dirt that had been sweated out from actually re-entering the pores. But the intention and the end result of all that preparation is given to us in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 27. Here is the intention, the purpose of all that work. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 27. It was all that he might present it to himself a glorious ecclesia, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. And so it is to be a glorious ecclesia. And what we are looking at this morning, brothers and sisters, is the glory of the bride. You see, we've looked at her formation, we've looked at her constitution, we've looked at her preparation, and now we want to look at her glory. It is to be a glorious ecclesia. That is the aim of all that work of preparation. But what is that glory? Where is that glory manifest? I'll come again to another of those key passages, Psalm 45. The word of God is so wonderful, brothers and sisters, and the words that it takes hold of and brings out to instruct us, they are tremendous. What is that glory? Where is that glory? Verse 12. It says, "And the daughter of Tyre shall be there with a gift, even the rich among the people shall entreat thy favour. The king's daughter is all glorious within." So the glory of the ecclesia is an inward glory. She is glorious within. But that word within, brothers and sisters, do you know what it means literally in the Hebrew? It means what we would call indoors. It's talking about a building. It's talking about the temple city. And it is a word that is used most frequently in the scriptures about buildings, within the chamber, inside the house. This indoors glory, this within glory. And of course it was the Apostle Paul writing to the Romans who said that he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And circumcision is circumcision of the heart. The heart. Very often, brothers and sisters, in the scriptures, the heart is the symbol of the desires, the purposes, the thoughts and intents of the heart. Out of the heart proceed all those evil things that we find in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 15 and verse 9, I think it is. Out of the heart. The heart of man is deceitful and desperately wicked. the desires of man naturally are such. But in that part, the bride is glorious. You see, as strangers and pilgrims, her virgin daughters have abstained from fleshly lusts. Come back to another of our key passages, 1 Peter chapter 3. First of Peter 3 and verse 3. That the scriptures are all tying up, speaking as we would expect in unison. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning. You see, the king's daughter is all glorious within. Let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold and or of putting on of apparel. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, the circumcision of the heart, the cutting off of the desires of the flesh, the abstaining from fleshly lusts. That's where the glory is manifest in the antitypical bride. But again, the Spirit directs our attention to a particular aspect by using a particular word here. You see, the apostle is talking about sisters. He's talking about wives. But actually what he says is, let it be the hidden man of the heart. So in the heart of the woman is a man. And so the apostle, speaking of that ecclesial bride, he speaks of Christ being formed in you through faith. The hidden man of the heart. In the heart of the woman, there are the aspects and the attributes of the man. See, her glory is the glory of her husband. It isn't her own glory. You see, she's totally dependent upon her husband. She came out of him. She has no glory of her own. The glory that is in her heart is the man. It's a reflection of her husband. And so each of us has that responsibility to strive to the best of our ability to manifest the glory of Christ. But that word that's translated and written there, man, in the Greek, literally means man-faced. The man-faced one. I'm not going to go into the cherubim, but let us just go back to the 2 Corinthians and chapter 4. Verse that we've not been unfamiliar with again this week, brothers and sisters. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 6. Who is the man-faced one? 2 Corinthians 4 verse 6. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined, where? In our hearts, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. There's the man-faced one that should be in our hearts. And that's what's shined into our hearts. Come back to the 1 Peter chapter 3, please, because there's one other point that we want to just make before we leave there. So this glory, this ornament of a meek and a quiet spirit, which it explains it as in verse 4, is, end of verse 4, in the sight of God, of great price. Of great price, of inestimable value. And that's the estimation of the Father. It's in the sight of God of great price. Now come with me. We should be basing the majority of the rest of our remarks in Proverbs chapter 31. Because I believe here is brought before us the glory, the inner glory of the bride. It's the advice to the king by his mother to seek a virtuous woman for his wife. And we've said before that this is a particular woman. It's the virtuous woman. Verse 29, thou excellest them all. A particular woman. It is the advice of the king to seek the virtuous woman as his bride. But in verse 10, the word says, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Such a one is rare, is what's being said here. Her price is far above rubies. It's incomparable value. Rotherham suggests that, or Rotherham translates the word rubies as corals. Strong suggests that it's a pearl. It's one of the same associated Hebrew words as we've already looked at in penina, penina, and the corner. And the idea is that it's round, it's turning round a corner. Whether it is a round corner or whether it's an angular corner, which is the cut of the ruby, I don't know, brothers and sisters. But if it's a pearl, come with me to Matthew chapter 13. And verse 45. You see, the ornament of a meek and a quiet spirit is in the sight of God of great price. And that the price of the virtuous woman is far above rubies. Verse 45, again, Matthew 13. The kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now, I don't know how you understand that parable, brethren and sisters, and I think there are probably different opinions as to the way round it's speaking. But in the context of what we're saying this morning, surely that pearl of great price is the virtuous woman. Her price is above pearls. The meek and quiet spirit is of great price in the estimation of the Father. So, it's the Father who is the merchant man, who is seeking goodly pearls. Just as Ahasuerus was seeking that bride, and the various women came in before him, and then he found Esther, that pearl of great price. And he's found that virtuous woman, that one whose price is above pearls, above rubies. And then it says he sold all that he had and bought it. He gave everything that he'd got. He gave his only begotten that it might be purchased. And the ecclesia is purchased by the blood of his own, the apostle says. By his own blood in the Authorized Version. By the blood of his own in the Greek. And so he purchased it by that one thing that he valued above all else, his only begotten, the pearl of great price. the only begotten was given. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25. He gave himself for it. Come back with me now to the book of Job and verse 28, chapter 28. Verse 18. All of the words that are used to translate the word rubies in Proverbs chapter 31 are used in this verse. Verse 18 of Job 28. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. Wisdom, the price of wisdom is above rubies. Now come to Proverbs and this time chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 13. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. Verse 15. She, that is wisdom or understanding, she is more precious, and notice she's personified as a woman, she is more precious than rubies, and all the things that thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. There's nothing that you can make of equal value than wisdom. She's more precious than rubies. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 1. And again, she's personified as a woman. Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of the high places, by the way of the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Verse 11. Wisdom is better than rubies, and all things that may be desired are not to be compared with her. And so here we have wisdom personified as a woman, and in chapter 31 and verse 10 we have the virtuous woman as the personification of wisdom. It is she whose price is far above rubies. She's the personification of wisdom. Just as the harlot is the personification of folly. Look at those themes in Proverbs. Obviously we don't have time to go into it, but the harlot is the personification of folly. The virtuous woman is the personification of wisdom. We're not going back there right now, but that was the difference between the virgins that were accepted in Matthew 25 and the virgins that were rejected. It was an issue of wisdom. Five were wise and five were foolish. Of course, it's only the scriptures that are able to make us wise unto salvation. And so the scriptures are again the most crucial thing. This is where the wisdom comes from. The bride must be made of the same stuff as her husband, the word in our lives. And of course, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of Yahweh. And without the fear of Yahweh, and without that correct attitude of mind, we can't understand the scriptures correctly, brothers and sisters. If you've ever spoken to, as I'm sure you have, people about the word of God, you can tell almost instantly whether they will be receptive or not. And it's that attitude of mind they've got. If they have a fear of Yahweh, then they will be teachable try and learn wisdom from the Word. But there are a class that don't have that. This wisdom is manifest in the attributes of the character of the virtuous woman, the bride. And these attributes of her character are then described in the remainder of this chapter at the end of Proverbs. Look at verses 11 and 12, for example. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. I tried this is the sort of embryo of this address, brothers and sisters, of this study, and I tried it out at a number of Bible classes before, well, months back now, to develop it. And one brother at one ecclesia came up to me afterwards, and we'd been through the attributes of the virtuous woman here, and she seems to be a strong, independent woman. And a brother came up to me afterwards and said, no wonder her husband sat in the gate. But, brothers and sisters, these two verses set the scene. She's not a strong, independent woman. Everything she is doing for him. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. And these are the first of the attributes that are brought out. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. He relies on her, and she is reliable. And what she's doing for him, so that he will have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. He's got confidence in her that she will not let him down. And that is an aspect that we need to cultivate in our individual lives, brothers and sisters, reliability in the truth. If we say that we're going to do something, let us do it. This also brings out another aspect that we've been discussing, the interdependence of the two. He relies upon her. She supplied that which lacked to him, to make him figuratively complete. He relies upon her. What a responsibility, brothers and sisters, ecclesially. He relies upon us to manifest his glory, the attributes of his character. And you see, with the virtuous woman, his heart doth safely trust in her. He knows that she won't let him down. He knows. He's got confidence. And it says, so that he shall have no need of spoil. I don't think that's a particularly good translation, again, brothers and sisters. a better one is Rotherham, which says, gain he shall not lack. Or another one says, he has no lack of gain. Where's that directing us? He has no lack of gain. It's taking us to Luke chapter 19, brothers and sisters. Luke chapter 19 and verse 12. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. And he called his 10 servants notice there were 10 virgins. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him and etc. etc. But he comes back. Verse 15, it was come to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called to him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much everyone had gained by trading. Then the first came, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, thou shalt have authority over 10 cities. And the second likewise, didn't he? Thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And the idea of gain is being brought before us here. You see, the faithful servants had used that which their master had left them with. And what have we been left with? An understanding of the scriptures. And they had put it to good use. They had, as it were, sold the oil. And they had gained gain for the master. And you see, we have an obligation to use this word, that it might mould our characters, that we might become more Christ-like, and that in showing forth the attributes of his character, the attributes of the character of the Father, the virtues of him that hath called us out of darkness to his marvellous light, and in that sense giving him gain. The gain is our progress in manifesting him, showing forth his glory in a moral way in our lives. He shall have no lack of gain from the bride. She shall have faithfully dealt with that which he has given her to produce the glory, the hidden man of the heart. And this is something that has been continuously taking place throughout the time of opportunity that the servants have had. Because back in Ecclesiastes, in Proverbs chapter 31, I'm always doing this, it says Ecclesiastes at the top of the page on my Bible. Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 12, it says, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. You see, this gaining is something that will take us all the days of our life. It isn't something that we can take a holiday from or we can retire from. It's a patient continuance in well-doing. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Verses 13 to 15 show that she is a hard worker. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. It seems strange to me, brothers and sisters, when I first read this. Why does it say she seeks wool and flax? Well, wool and flax is something that were rare. I don't think they were. She wouldn't have had to seek them. Again, the word is that the Spirit is bringing out a word for us to make a link and to teach us a lesson. You see, the wool, our time has gone much quicker than I hoped it would, but the wool, we won't turn to Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 16, though thy sins be as crimson, yet shall they be as wool. And the word, the idea seems to be of bleached white. And it seems to be, though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be accounted as covered. The flax, and the quotation for this, which we haven't got time to turn to, is Ezekiel chapter 44 and verse 17. It equals linen. And it is in Ezekiel 44 and verse 17, the clothing of the priests that minister in that temple that Ezekiel saw. So there will be literal priests clothed in literal linen made from flax in that temple. And it will still speak of the righteousness of saints. So she is seeking, what's she seeking? Righteousness. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33. Seek ye first, or better as it's rendered in Mark, seek ye rather the kingdom of God and his righteousness. But this this industry, this hard work that she does, causes her, verse 15, to rise while it is yet night. She's so keen to work for her husband. Well, I sometimes wonder about our keenness to the work. We talked earlier in the week in Isaiah 6, here am I, send me. Where is that attitude, brothers and sisters? She was up before it was light in order to work. And that's a link back to that great example of Ruth. Come back with me to the book of Ruth and chapter 2. In Ruth chapter 2 and verse 7, Boaz has asked his labourers who Ruth is. He's seen her in the field and he says, whose damsel is this? And in verse 7, they say, and she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. It was Ruth's idea that she go out and glean. We haven't got time to look at the history of Ruth, unfortunately, but it was Ruth's idea. She wanted to do the work. She had that attitude of, here am I, send me. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. She continued from the morning. So what the labourers are saying is, she's been gleaning since morning. That word morning means daybreak, dawn. So what the labourers are saying, since dawn she's been gleaning in the field. Now if she's been in the field since dawn, she must have got up while it was still night to get herself ready and to get into that field. Because at dawn, at first light, she was in the field, gleaning. So she had risen while it was yet night, in order to do the work, in order to provide for her household, because that's what this is all coming down to. And we have spoken about this before. It is the duty of each of us, as individual members of that bride, to, as far as we're able, to provide for one another of the household. The response of Boaz is there in that chapter. The response of the strong one, who ultimately will be her husband. Verse 11. Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath fully been showed me of all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knowest not heretofore. Yahweh recompense thy work, and a full reward be given with thee of Yahweh Elohim of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Here's the response of Boaz to that eagerness to the work. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty. And ultimately, she receives the redemption. Back to Proverbs and verses 16 to 18. She's not only willing to work, she is directs her work with wisdom and prudence. Verse 16, she considereth a field and buyeth it. She discerns what is profitable and puts her effort into achieving it. She perceives, she considers. And the principle there is described for us by the Apostle Peter when he says these words. As newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the word that ye may grow thereby, since ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious. See, she considers what is profitable and she obtains it. And the Apostle Peter is here saying, consider what is profitable. That's the sincere milk of the word. And desire it that you might obtain it. She considers a field and buyeth it. Verse 17. And again, a concept that we've not been unfamiliar with this week. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. The word strengthen in the Hebrew means, has two ideas behind it. One is to be strong, the other is to be alert. You see, she's not just working blindly. She's alert. She's considering what she's doing. And we always must do that, brothers and sisters. We must consider what we are doing. You see, we might be working for our own ends. We might be working sincerely, not in accordance with the commandments of God. We must be alert. We must consider what we are doing. And the result of this prudence is in verse 18. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. This is the considering of the field. And the result is that her lamp goeth not out by night. We've already discussed that. The wise virgins. The wise virgins. They are the ones whose lamp went not out. And in order to do this, she has been busy during the night, pouring out the oil. And so we have to be busy during the night of Gentile times, awaiting that time when the Son of Righteousness will arise. During the night we have to be pouring out the oil, that our lamps might not go out. Verse 19 to 22. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. The idea of the distaff is of a wheel, a circuit, something that is constantly turning. And that really is like us, considering the word. We've got to be constantly turning that word over in our minds, meditating upon it, that it might sink into our hearts and affect our desires and our purposes. That the Hebrew for spindle means a director, something which guides the direction, and the spindle is what guides the direction of the distaff, directing the word to profit. But all of this work is for a certain class of people. Verse 20. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. Who is it that she is stretching forth her hands to? Who are the poor and the needy? Well, they are a very specific class of people, brothers and sisters. They are not generally the poor and the needy of this world. Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14 and verse 16. Parable of the Master. Then said he unto them, Jesus unto them, a certain man made a great supper and bade many. And those who were bidden refused to go. So, verse 21. So that servant came and showed his lord all these things. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to the servant, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou commanded, and yet there is room. And the lord said unto his servant, go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. He's going out to find the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And these he finds on the highways and in the hedges. I can't remember whether I've said this before this week, brothers and sisters. Thanks. Who is he going to find there? Those who have no continuing city. Those who are strangers and pilgrims. That's who the poor and the needy are. They are the poor in spirit. Those who are the children who are not manifest at this time. They are none other than a household that she has gathered around her. Because when we go back to Proverbs, and chapter 31, it tells us the result of this. The result of this work with the spindle and the distaff and the stretching out of her hands to the poor and the needy is in verse 21, is that she is not afraid of the snow for her household. There's the poor and the needy. Because the spindle and the distaff has ensured that all her household are clothed with scarlet. But in verse 22 it says that she maketh herself coverings of tapestry. And I'm not going to talk about the tapestry, because I think Brother Michael might. Her clothing is silk and purple. The word silk there is, it's the Hebrew shesh, and it means bleached stuff, white linen. Her clothing is of purple, which is a mixture of blue and red. Again, our time is gone, we can't go to the references, but Numbers chapter 15 and verse 39 is good enough for me to indicate that the blue indicates the word of God. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 18, the red is sin's flesh. And so again we have the word made flesh. She has to be covered in that which her husband is made of. Strength and honour, it says, are her clothing. She shall rejoice, verse 25, in time to come. You see, now for her is not a period of rejoicing. We have a hymn in our hymn book, and the words used to say, no joy for us till thou return. But they now say, no lasting joy for us till thou return. All our joy and our desire and our hope is bound up with the return of the Master. She shall rejoice in time to come. She is the one in the Song of Solomon that is anxiously awaiting. She's made up of those men that wait, eagerly anticipating the return of the Master. Verse 29 then. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. And this always takes my mind back to Esther and the sisters. There were many there that were brought before the king, but she excelled them all. What worldly charms had the others to go before the king? What worldly charms had they to impress Haggai? Yet through her character, nothing more, she required nothing more through her character. Esther excelled them all, ultimately through the fear of Yahweh. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. Verse 30. Favour is deceitful. Beauty is vain. but a woman that feareth Yahweh. There's the beginning of wisdom. And this one is wisdom personified. The woman that feareth Yahweh, she shall be praised. That will be her praise. That will be her glory in the age which is to come. The fear of Yahweh will ultimately be the praise, the glory of the bride. May we, brothers and sisters, be there to see and be a part of that.